Like, if you want the CEO job, you have to demonstrate that you can already act and think like a CEO, that you've brought ideas to the table that are CEO level ideas, that you're helping your CEO solve his or her problems.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and president of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast.
Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. This season, we've explored the theme of leadership, delving into the philosophies that inform decision-making and the career journeys that have led our guests to prominent leadership roles. To close out the season, we're excited to feature an industry powerhouse, Jay Caron. Jay is the CEO of the National Golf Course Owners Association, where he leads initiatives that support the $102 billion golf industry. Throughout his impressive career, he has also served as the CEO of associations in the lodging and hospitality sectors, and he currently sits on the boards of ASAE and the U.S. Travel Association. In our conversation today, Jay will share his unique path to becoming a leading voice across multiple billion-dollar industries. We'll discuss his leadership style, the foresight strategies that have helped him keep his organization's future focused and relevant, and how he balances the complex challenges of the golf course industry. Additionally, Jay will offer insights into the role of AI in associations and how leaders can prepare their organizations for the future. I'm really excited, so let's get started. Welcome, Jay. I'm so excited to host you today on this episode of the Association Advisor Podcast. Let's jump right in. I mean, you have served in so many high-profile leadership roles, including your current role as CEO of the National Golf Course Owners Association. You're also chair-elect of the ASAE board and the chair of the ASAE Research Foundation. That's quite a heavy load of responsibility. Please share with our listeners your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. That's a lot of responsibility and a lot of letters and acronyms.
Say that 10 times fast, right?
Looking back on the journey of how I kind of got here, I got to say, and maybe, you know, hopefully some listeners, especially parents out there, will encourage their kids down a certain path because, you know, there was kind of some seminal moments in my life that I look back on that probably were led to where I am. But one of those was, you know, going way back to like 1989, 1990, right? And I was a junior in high school and I was going to run for vice president of the junior class just because I thought I can't win. Nobody knows me. I can't be president, you know? And so my dad said, just run for president, see what happens. So I did. And I won this election. Wow. And all of a sudden it stirred in me like, wow, first of all, I can do something, you know, really interesting. It thrust me right into now service, right? Doing something bigger than myself. I've got to serve the class. Oh, little did I know I was going to have to do our reunions for the rest of my life because I became, you know, the senior class president too. But, and then what it did, Christine, was it stimulated me into joining every club and organization I could get my hands on in high school and into college. I became a joiner, right? I mean, a real joiner of things. And being part of something beyond myself. And I was like part of 20 different organizations and clubs in college. It was crazy. And I say all that because in 1997, I moved to Charleston to get my master's in history. I was going to be a social studies teacher. That was my career path vision for myself. And at the time, I needed to get my master's degree because if you had a master's and you were a first-year teacher, you could make $21,000 a year instead of $19,000 a year with just a bachelor's. So I thought, okay, this will pay off. And I stumbled upon, as many of us do in the association world, an association job, right? Just to earn some cash while I was in graduate school, I got a job at the National Golf Course Owners Association. And so I didn't realize associations existed, you know, in this way. So when I got into it, all of that preparation and all of that experience in these clubs and organizations and leadership, it was just like this like aha moment, like, oh my gosh, isn't this awesome as a profession? And so I dove right in. I kind of left the teaching idea And it kind of brings me to that old phrase that chance favors the prepared mind, right? It's like, it was chance that most people end up in an association gig. And so I just was in hook, line, and sinker. And so I, as a young person, immediately took the profession seriously, started down the CAE path and all of that. And I knew that I wanted to be an association CEO someday. Because once you're like president of organizations, president of classes, you're just kind of like, well, I guess I should be president of everything or CEO of everything that I do in my life, right? So I pursued the CAE, which I got pretty young. And then I became a CEO of an association in the lodging industry when I was 33, I think it was. And then I just kind of ran two organizations in the lodging industry. And I got recruited back to golf in 2015 as the CEO of the organization where I started my association career. So that's a Cliff's Notes version of kind of how I got where I am. Yeah.
You know, what an incredible journey. And Jay, I think, you know, you touched on something really important that a lot of times in our younger years, we don't know exactly what we want to do. But those are formative years. Like you, I was the president of my 4-H club. And I think there's something to that, right? Is at a young age, if you find yourself leading things, typically you can rely on those skills in your professional life. And I think the point you made about parents in the next generation is figure out what your skill set is, because most of those skills you're learning or adapting at a young age, you don't even realize it, but those will help you in your professional career.
I mean, you have to experiment with things. Like my first thing of getting involved as a young person wasn't that class president's thing. I joined something called Odyssey of the Mind when I was like a freshman in high school. It was a competition for geeks, you know, like we would do skits and we would have brain teasers to solve and all this kind of stuff. It's just like, it was out of my comfort zone, but I did it. And my parents encouraged me. When I go to association meetings today and I'm in a room full of association execs, especially CEOs and others, it's like, it feels like everybody in this room was a student leader. Those people that you knew, the people who kind of liked school and liked being involved and liked doing things, and it's kind of carried forward into this association profession. So that's why I like being in the room with other association execs. We're all kind of nerds on this stuff.
Yeah. And well, and speaking of being in a room with other executives like you, I speak to many association leaders. And the one thing they all have in common is we're strained with limited resources, right? There's only so much funding available. So tell us a little bit about, for your association, how you direct both your energy, time, and your staff's time on how to make the most impact with the resources you have available.
Sure. So, and anybody listening who runs smaller organizations will feel this even more so. Although I'm sure no matter what size organization you run, no matter what resources, if you have $100 million a year or $1 million a year, you probably can still feel somewhat resource restrained. You know, you wish you had more to do and more capacity. So, and that's the thing about association work is like the to-do list always seems greater than the capacity to get things done, right? So you have to make choices and on what you do, to your point, Christine. And for me, I think there's kind of a, you can actually draw out the quadrant. And we've done these exercises at NGCOA on the staff. From time to time, we take an audit, not every year, but every couple of years, it seems like, and we have this kind of mental or actual quadrant where on one axis of that quadrant is impact and return. What do we think, either a current program or an idea that we have, what impact or return do we think it'll have for our members and our industry? Like greater impact. This is a huge issue for our industry. We need to work on it. Or sometimes it may be just a business idea for the association. Is this going to have a great financial return? That alone is not enough, because what we think is, well, how do we use that financial return to do these other big things? It's not just we're all about money. It's about getting resources to work on the big things. So that's one axis. And the other axis I would call expenditures. You know, what is it going to cost us? Money, time, staff, all of this. There's multiple versions of expenditures, right? When we're working. So you have that quadrant, you start plotting things together. You figure out, okay, this is, it's going to have a high return, low expenditure. Awesome. It makes the cut. This one might have high return, but high expenditure. Do we have the capacity? Let's talk about that. Can we fit that in? Can we start beta testing now and building a minimum viable product of what we think needs to happen in this idea? So it's just constantly looking at that, and that mental quadrant becomes this intuitive algorithm then in your head. And experience in doing this year over year, you kind of automatically filter for things oftentimes when you see ideas and you can see the impact in your head and you can visualize the expenditures and you, okay, this is going to stay on my list. So we kind of have our natural filters after doing this for a long time. You know, that experience helps for sure. So, you know, that's what we do. You have to have that kind of exercise. Otherwise, you're going to live in perennial frustration of never getting anything done because you want to do everything.
Yeah, Jay, and I like what you said, because there's two pieces I want to pull out. It starts with what's going to impact your members, which is the heart of every single association. And then what ROI are you going to get? And I think that's really sound advice for any association. Like, ask yourselves those questions first is, what does it do for your members and what ROI can you expect? Mm-hmm. And that, I think that helps a lot. So,
you know, and the boards, especially for CEOs listening, the boards want to understand ROI, because I don't know if this is really the best thing for association boards when you say your fiduciary responsibility is your first responsibility. And I get that, because on your watch, you don't want to screw it up. You don't want to mess up the financials as a board. And so, because you're the custodian of other people's money. So you kind of have this innate feeling to protect it and to do something with it. And so as a staff, if you can demonstrate ROI, even financially first, to a board, then they'll say, okay, they figured out the business side. We're not going to lose money on this. All right, now tell me what the idea is, kind of thing. It's like, you know, you got to understand your board if you have to lead with financials or lead with the idea and the kind of idealism of what you want to do. You got to understand your board to know what to go with first.
That is sound advice, because people don't realize like how important that is communicating effectively with your board and really understanding what motivates them or what they're going to look at in terms of measuring success. So all of us are accountable to boards, and making sure that that is at the forefront is an important takeaway. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Let's pivot and talk a little bit about your leadership style, and how do you align your style with priorities? And if you could give us some ideas of key skills that you think make an effective leader in today's landscape.
Oh, wow. So leadership priorities, I have to say, are just simply parallel to what the board wants. You know, like, what do they want? And that kind of dictates the priorities, what those leadership things are. And for us at NGCOA, it was the same case for the lodging associations I ran, because in those cases, they were the underdogs of the lodging industry. I represented the bed and breakfast and country inns and the small lodging properties for a long time. And so as kind of the underdog to the big chains and the big box hotels, the voice was really important, that our voice was heard, right? And same thing with golf, in the sense of like, well, everybody knows golf. You know, I mean, we were just talking offline about like, you know, your significant other and others. Everybody knows golf. We have our own television channel for, you know.
I think everybody's jealous of your job.
Yeah. I've got a good one. I got to admit, as trade associations go, I have a good one. But speaking of that, though, you're making a good point for me, is that in the golf world, my association is kind of the behind the scenes, not well known one. Right? It's, you know, the ones that everybody understands and sees, is the PGA of America, the LPGA, the USGA, and all of that. And so voice is important to my audience, the owners of the golf courses, who feel like, you know, we're the ones who own the businesses here, and we have a lot at risk. And so voice is important. So if that's a leadership priority, so for me, from a leadership style standpoint, then I need to be a good communicator. I'm out there doing, you know, podcasts in my industry. We put on a live webcast show that we stream live on YouTube and X and LinkedIn every single month called Golf Business Live. I write my columns, you know, that in our magazine, I write it myself. So being an effective communicator is so important to be confident in being a voice, right? And when I say voice, Christine, with association executive, you know, responsibilities here, I don't mean propaganda for the association, talking about what NGCOA is doing and, you know, rah-rah, come to the conference and join the organization. Yes, we do talk about those things for sure. But I use my voice to talk about the most important issues in our industry. And I'll touch sensitive topics that a lot of association execs stay away from because they want to stay in a safe zone, right? I kind of enjoy using my voice to talk about these things, and it benefits the association from a leadership standpoint. So that's one. The other one is from a leadership priority or a leadership, you know, priority is results. As association exec, we get measured on what we're doing. And my leadership style, maybe it's more of a personal style, is that I'm a doer. You know, it sounds like you probably are too. My wife, she likes to, you know, brag about me. Oh, my husband's a doer, because my two favorite hobbies in life seem to be filling out forms and checking off things from a to-do list, you know? And so it's like a sport for me. So you bring that to the table, the desire to do, get things done, then that certainly helps me be an effective leader, because then we can go to these board meetings and show our members and our board, look at what we've done for you. If you don't have a doer mentality, it's very easy as association exec to kind of get caught up in just conversation and committee meetings and all of this. But if you're a natural doer, you want to, yes, you have to do some of these things, but you, at the end, you're pushing for results and pushing for products and services and action. And that, so those two things have kind of made me, I think, hopefully an effective leader with my organizations.
Well, and Jay, I think what's important too is when you stitch those things together, whereas you're doing things, you're an effective communicator and you're being the voice, people see that and that's very contagious. You know, I know just yesterday we did a town hall and I let every business unit leader provide an update on what things they've got done in the last quarter. And the feedback is so powerful because they see things getting done. And a lot of times I think the mistake that gets made is things are getting done, but it's not being communicated outward. And I also love that you believe in being a voice for your association, the industry, in a non-propaganda way, because just like in the association advisor, we really don't talk about Naylor. We talk about you and everything that is important to associations. And I think that there are a lot of platforms available today for CEOs, whether that be podcasts, webinars, LinkedIn, that you can do it for really low cost and lift. So kudos to you for taking advantage of that because it makes a difference, I believe.
I appreciate that. One thing I have to get better at and take lessons from other CEOs in this is simply stopping and taking stock of what we have done, to your point, and thanking the people and everybody who have done it, because I am such a forward-looking person. Once, you know, the conference is over, bam, okay, what are we doing for the next conference, you know? And because an association world is never a finish line. We're built for perpetuity, literally built for perpetuity, to be alive and an ongoing concern as long as our profession, our trade is alive, right? We're supposed to be there forever. So when you know that, there is no finish line. So I'm just kind of conditioned just to keep running around that proverbial metaphorical track of just going, right? And so I have to stop and remind myself to thank people and take stock of what has been done. And, you know, I've just started doing some CEO communications to the members, which is stopping in a moment in time every quarter. Here's what we've done for you members, and bringing light to that. But you asked me also kind of what I think is important maybe in leadership today. And this is a tough one, is, but you have to do it, is to be as inclusive as is reasonable in due diligence, decision-making, all of that. Inclusiveness is incredibly important for a lot of reasons, but you could also, it could also drag you down too if you're just doing it too much, if you're just getting too many voices, too many cooks in the kitchen. So you got to find a reasonable amount of inclusion and involvement from your members, from your staff, from your board, people outside your industry if you need that perspective. But in the due diligence phase, I think that's the most important time to have that inclusivity so that you've got voices at the table crafting and helping you shape what's to come.
And, you know, that is today's leadership. Today's leadership is not commanding from a corner office, but rather building a seat at the table for the voices that matter, that can feed into your vision, your strategies, and what's getting done. So I think that's fantastic that you subscribe to that way of thinking.
The Ivy Tower and the corner office are pejorative terms in this day and age, right? Mm-hmm. Like, whereas like, oh, the corner office is, you've made it and that's the special place and that's a good place. Well, it's kind of has this role reversal now, or at least they're kind of branded as, no, they're not good. You need to come down from the Ivy Tower. You need to get out of the corner office, you know, and so many ways that association CEOs can be doing that.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. You know, I want to pivot a little bit about something you do outside the association world that some people may not know, but that there's a role you had as honorary commander at the Joint Military Base in Charleston. So that is a very different type of role, and you serve as a liaison between a military base and the local community. Tell us a little bit about that and what you've learned from that.
Sure. Well, my brother-in-law is a colonel in the Air Force, and so he and his family live somewhere different every 2 or 3 years, right? And so when he takes over the command of a wing or something at an Air Force base, he is assigned a local honorary commander, and it's a local citizen leader who's just there to support you, be a friend, be a peer, be a mentor maybe in some ways, so that for the brief period that you're there, there's just someone local, you know, that you can connect with. Sometimes you can work on initiatives together. Sometimes it's just about having a friend in that community for your commander, because you get matched with an honorary commander gets matched with a commander, and you're basically kind of like buddies, right? And so my brother-in-law, Jen, said, hey, Jay, I think you should check this out. I think you'd be good at this. And it's out of my comfort zone, honestly. I mean, I once thought about going into the reserve years and years ago, my wife talked me out of it. And so I've kind of always, going along with the clubs and organizations who want to be part of something bigger than myself. And there's probably no better example than the military for sure. So I said, sure. And you have to apply for it. And I did. And you actually go through an interview process and you go to a cocktail party where you're actually kind of being judged in the cocktail party, whether or not you who are we going to choose kind of thing. And so for me, what it did for me was it got me out of my comfort zone, which was probably associations, golf buddies, tennis buddies, and maybe some local political organization I'm a part of. And that was it. That was my world. It's like, wow, this is not my world. And I got to go on base and really see what's going on there. And the wing that I was commander for, they actually had an annual golf fundraiser. So I got to participate in that, help them and do kinds of fun stuff with that, which was great. And I ended up playing golf and making friendships outside of that with some of those commanders. So what it did for me is it expanded my mind because I got out of my comfort zone. And that's the only thing that'll expand your mind if you get out of your comfort zones and echo chambers. And it opened a whole new network of people and friends and buddies and connections that I just would never have connected with otherwise. So my advice on that is make room in your life for one out of the box, out of your comfort zone initiative, whether it's volunteering for something, jumping into a men's group or a women's group or something that is really you're curious about outside of your comfort zone, but just do it. You'll grow because of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I subscribe to that philosophy myself. I think it's always important to get outside your comfort zone. I also try to push my teams to do that. I'll share with you Sarah Sane, who's VP of Content Services. This was outside her comfort zone doing some of this podcast. And you'll find that people thank you for doing that because they usually come away with, wow, I had no idea I was capable, or I met these people with a different perspective. And to your point, if we only surround ourselves with our own comfort zone, you're never going to upskill or see things differently. So I think that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you do and the NGCOA does, which is advocacy on behalf of your members. So tell us a little bit about how you understand what the needs of your members are and then how you advocate for those.
This is the fun part. One of the real fun parts of association work is trying to figure that out, crack the code of what's going to be impactful, meaningful to our members. And on the advocacy side, sometimes it's crystal clear when there is a legislative initiative that's aimed at your industry in an adverse way. You just work on that, whether it's on your members' minds or not. But advocacy to NGCOA is much more than just government affairs, which it is government affairs. And that we don't have to necessarily get our members' minds. We just have to understand what's happening in the legislative world, policy world, and know what the adverse and friendly things are, from taxation, environment, what have you. That's not actually very difficult to figure out. Some of the more difficult advocacy work is what I would call in the market influencing space. Like when in the golf industry, if there are mergers of major technology companies in our space and it becomes kind of monopolistic or there are antitrust concerns, how do we get involved in that, right? And how do we advocate for our members against players in our own ecosystem? We have to understand, is this important to you members? And so we have to listen to our members at every form and format that we can, whether, talking to them, visiting with them. We travel as a staff. We get out there and attend a lot of meetings. And we're out there. And, one thing that I have done in the past as well is I've had an internship essay contest with my members every couple of years where I'll say, hey, hire me as an intern for 3 days. Jay Caron will come to your golf course or in the past at bed and breakfast. Hire me for 2 or 3 days, write an essay as to why, within 500 words, why I should choose your place and what am I going to learn? And I go out there and I do it. I work at that course and I shadow the owner, the operator or whatever it might be. I blog about it or now social media about it and share what I've learned. Right. And one thing comes to mind, when I was shadowing an owner at a golf course in Michigan. I was hanging out in their pro shop. Customers are coming in and I just kind of pulled the golf professional aside and I started talking about what I thought was an important issue in our industry. And what I picked up from it was he said, basically, I'm concerned about that, but it's not my concern. My concern is the customer in front of me. And I saw, Christine, my job as the association CEO is to kind of stay one step ahead of the member and look around the corner, what's impacting them? What's going to be the stuff that really impacts our industry and our members' lives? And try to communicate that with them. What I found was in this case that I knew this was an important issue, but they didn't feel my sense of urgency about it, right? So I said, oh, we have to do a better job communicating what the impact of this could be. So sometimes on the advocacy side, we will ask our members, hey, what's on your mind? We actually do a pulse report every year called the Golf Business Pulse Report. We interview them, we survey them. But I think it's our job, maybe even more so than asking them what's on their mind, is staying one step ahead of them, looking around the corner and looking at what's coming and synthesizing that for our members. One example is an intellectual property thing that may hit our industry in the next 10 to 15 years. So golf courses are outside green grass places, right? But more people are playing golf on simulators now, right? And in virtual reality situations. Well, you know, whether it's satellite technology or drone technology that's picking up and digitizing these courses and putting them in the virtual reality world or on simulators, who owns the intellectual property rights to the golf course? And do they take the images of your golf course with your permission or without your permission? So now people can play your golf course on the screen and you had nothing to do with it. And so you're charging subscription fees for people to use those simulators, et cetera, et cetera. So this is not on the minds of my members right now, you know, but it should be on our minds as their association. And so now we're connecting the dots. We have an intellectual property committee that we have formed of owners and operators. We're bringing in IP attorneys from the gaming industry and other places to kind of, like I said, synthesize this a little bit and say, well, what do we need to do about this to protect our owners and operators? So those are the kinds of things that we do, and we're doing it all of the time, all the time. But that's, like I said, that's the fun stuff.
I love that. I love that you do an essay contest to get hired for a couple of days and you actually go do it. It's like undercover boss.
Yeah.
You learn a lot that way, I will tell you. So the other thing, you know, you talked about intellectual. It's not on their minds now, but it could be in the future. Future challenges. You don't know what you're going to face. So how does one stay prepared or in a position that you can address future challenges or try to anticipate some of them?
That is the topic du jour in associations right now, is foresight, right? And I have to give credit to Jeff DeCagna. You know, he's an association consultant that's pretty well known in our industry because he's been talking about foresight for years.
We did a podcast with him and he talks about that actually.
Oh, he's awesome. And he's been talking about this probably 10 or 15 years, that the duty of foresight is actually a board's maybe first duty, maybe even before fiscal responsibility or fiscal duties. You know, because as a board, as an association, it's your responsibility to be looking around the corner to figure out what's coming down the road that might impact your industry and to bring that to the board discussions. And the board discussions lead to actions and initiatives at the staff level, right? So we're really trying to figure out, Christine, how do we crystal ball our industries as much as we can? How do we bring a crystal ball to our industry and then turn that into action? I don't think we've all figured that out yet. I just think we know it's important. I mean, ASAE, the Research Foundation, does have an amazing resource called Foresight Works that gives association leaders the construct to consider the major disruptions and changes happening in society, economy, the world, employment, workforce, all of these things, and where they will intersect your profession or your industry, and gives you a bit of a toolkit on how to address those things in your context as an association leader. First of all, I see that as my job, maybe even before the board, is to be looking at the economy, looking at culture and consumerism, where people are, you know, spending their time and money in the world outside of golf. You know, everything from, let me give an example, the changing definition of good service. Good service for generations was people serving people, the white glove service and all that. Somewhere in the last 15, 20 years, good service changed into what I call elegant self-service, right? You go to your restaurants, to your fast food places or quick serve restaurants, and that soda machine has been moved from behind the counter to in front of the counter so you can serve yourself. And you think as a consumer, this is the best thing. I can refill my own drink and I don't have to wait at the counter for it. And I'm not going to be paying for, you know, refills, all that kind of stuff. It's like elegant self-service is the definition of good service now. So as a golf course operations, when you're dealing with workforce challenges and slim margins as an operator, where can you bring in automation and self-service to the golfer, especially when 9 out of 10 people that come to the golf course know exactly what they're doing, know where they're going? So it's my job to talk to the industry and say, look, this is happening out there. What are we doing about it? Or the Amazon Priming of the world, where you can get something the next day on your doorstep. I'm encouraging owners and operators, how do you get food and beverage delivered out on the golf course faster when people want it, where people want it, instead of waiting for that beverage cart to show up maybe in the next 6 holes, right? So that's my job, is to use that voice again and the microphone and our column inches to talk about these things that are happening outside and what are we going to do about it. So I think that's the best that we can do as association execs is to constantly try to connect those dots.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, there's so much in it when listening to you about what's on the mind of your association members. It's amazing. One thing, though, that comes up a lot is the use of AI. So have you been using it, experimenting with it in your association, and what impact, if at all?
So at NGCOA, the only use that we've, I guess, seen so far in association management is we have this plug-in to our Google Meets for staff meetings and other meetings called MeetGeek. And it basically records everything. It records it and it provides this transcript and summaries, all that. And it's just like, wow, this is pretty darn cool. That's it so far, Christine. As far as our use of AI, we haven't. I mean, I imagine some staff here and there might be using ChatGPT to give them a head start on some column or marketing copy or something, but very little, honestly. As an association, that's been the extent of our use of it. Now, we're having conversations about the AI impact on the golf industry and what's coming. So we formed an AI kind of task force to start looking at what this impact could be for the golf industry. And I've seen some early technology, for example, that would allow an artificial intelligence infused app that can record your golf swing and might tell you, oh man, this is what's happening from, you know, from our observation. This is what you need to do to fix that. Now, is that a threat or an opportunity for the teaching professional? Is that going to be enough for people and that they feel like I don't need a teaching pro? Or is it going to just whet their appetite a little bit and say, okay, I need a bit of a Sherpa or someone to help me through this. I still need that human connection to keep me accountable to whatever it is. So we're trying to figure out how do we leverage this stuff? There'll be more AI coming out for golf operators and how they run their businesses. Maybe we're terrible at collecting and reporting data in our industry, performance data as you know, golf courses, and collaborating and aggregating information for rounds and revenue and occupancy. Not very good at that. My hope, cross fingers, is that we've been so delayed and lazy about it that we're just, the AI is just going to help us get there by pulling the information out of our software systems and be able to report on these metrics and activities and KPIs. So I'm hopeful that we'll have some big data we've avoided or have not had in our industry in a long time.
Yeah, I definitely think that's possible. And just to take away for you, Jay, a lot of what we see with associations is there's AI powered newsletters that have been fantastic with personalization and content curation. So
let me ask you about that. I remember seeing some of this come out a few years ago about, you know, all right, so if the AI system figures out that Jay Caron likes to click on membership articles, we'll give Jay Caron more membership articles, right? And I get this sentiment of that. But do you think that that can go so far as to then only give me stuff and keep me in that echo chamber and not expose me to all of the other things I need to be thinking about and seeing as an association exec? Or, you know, what's the trade-off here for the curation of content based on what it thinks that I like?
Yeah, so there's two things about that. One is the personalization and the intelligence to respond to. It builds an algorithm and it gets obviously smarter the more you engage and teach it. That said, you can teach it to say what other things you want, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things about AI is you can use AI to expand and broaden. So it's like, okay, I know this, but I want to know this, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think you have to look at both sides on the trade-off. So on the one hand, executives, people, members, they're busy. So the idea of getting very important information that they care about that's targeted to them will surpass the need of just random things, mm-hmm. right? So they're more apt to engage with it. And so the stickiness of it really works well for member engagement. We use that in a lot of associations that we partner with. We do use AI and it's becoming increasingly more popular. So we've had really good success. And I think the jury's still out on a lot of that. So we're still in the early stages. And I'm sure as soon as they figure out what's not working, they'll figure out a solution of how to address that, right? So
I just love seeing the progress and just, you know, the improvement what we're seeing in association technology. That's great.
It is, yeah. So then, you know, we're coming closer to the end, but I want to ask you in terms of future, you've shared a lot of your wisdom throughout this conversation, which has been amazing. But is there any specific advice you would give to the younger professionals that want to rise through their careers in the association world like you have?
If you are interested in rising in your career, kind of moving up the ladder, which not everybody is, and we need to be okay with that. We need to kind of support that too. I don't think we should look down on people who aren't interested in going up that ladder. But those that are, I think there are probably a couple of things that you can do for yourself. One thing in particular comes to mind is that if you want to rise in the ranks, somehow you have to demonstrate before you have that job higher on the ladder, you have to demonstrate that you have the quality of thinking and the initiative of those roles above you, right? Like if you want the CEO job, you have to demonstrate that you can already act and think like a CEO, that you've brought ideas to the table that are CEO level ideas, that you're helping your CEO solve his or her problems, not just ideas on how you've improved your position and the work that's assigned to your position. Because you can be an A plus student or an A plus worker in the role that you're giving, let's say as a meeting planner. Just because you're an awesome meeting planner, you've done everything, you know, and you've excelled at it, does not necessarily show that you're ready for the next level job, right? So somewhere in your days and in your weeks and your months on the job, you have to prove that you have the quality of thought of that next job. Because when people hire CEOs or they're promoting people, there's a risk reward calculator happening, right? You know, and you can mitigate the risks somehow by demonstrating, maybe in some ways, I've already done that job or I'm already prepared for that job. Like when I got my first CEO job, I was the director of membership at NGCOA for 7 years. So when I left NGCOA in 2007 and got this job at the Innkeeping Association, in how I presented myself, I presented myself as kind of a mini CEO within NGCOA, that the membership domain that I ran, I had a budget that was just as large as the association that I was about to take over. The staff size was about the same staff size. I dealt with a lot of the issues that your job description already says that you'll need in a CEO. You have to find ways to tell your story or to demonstrate, I'm already ready for that job. And there are so many ways you can do that without having the job.
I believe in that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think you made two really good points. It's okay if you're happy doing what you're doing, because we need a lot of people to do the doing. And it's really important work. But, you know, I always look at people within who come to me with solutions for problems as those critical thinkers. I'm like, that's the person I'm going to tap into when I think about promotions and elevating and raising, you know, people within their career. But I think that's really sound advice. The other thing I want to ask you about is legacy. So all of us want to believe we're leaving something to that next generation or the place we've come from. So what do you think about legacy, and what would you like organizations to think about what you've left?
You know, this association thing that we get to do, like I said, is kind of this metaphorical, you're on a track and there's no finish line. Maybe it's a cross country track instead of a boring track, oval track, but we're on this path. And we have the baton for a little while before handing it off to someone else, as a CEOs, as board chairs, or whatever it is. And I got to laugh, because it seems like each time I've gotten a CEO gig, and this is my third one, is that someone, a friendly person on the board, they'll say to me, they'll whisper in my ear, don't F it up. You know, like, here's your baton, Jay, don't F it up. And it's like, that's table stakes, because you've got the baton now. So don't go backwards. But what we can do, and what I want to do as a leader and as a doer and all these things, is I want to leave an organization better than I found it, right?
Absolutely.
Financially, I wanted to have a better balance sheet and a bigger P&L, which just means more resources to do good work. It's not just about growing the business for that sake. It's about having more resources to get to that to-do list. I wanted to have a better reputation than when I found it. I wanted to be seen in an industry or even from outside the industry as, man, I want to work with that organization. I like working with that organization. They're good partners and they do good work. I want there to be more goodwill to and from my organization than when I left it. You know, you can measure an association by how many people may insult, not like you very much, or have negative things to say about your organization, whatever. By the end of my term, I want there to be only positive thoughts and feelings about my organization. That's for sure. I'd love to have lasting policy and legislative impacts. I mean, passing a law or defeating something that has an enormous impact on a profession or industry, that's a real feel-good thing when you can do something like that. But I think what I love most about what we can do, and from a legacy standpoint, is to kind of be the miracle grow for generational ideas. And it's bringing together everything we've talked about: foresight, connecting the dots, And then being a voice for entrepreneurial progressive practices that can really move an entire industry profession forward. If you use your voice to do that, talking, you're bullish on this technology coming to the industry. You're bullish on this new practice. Hey, owners and operators of golf courses, if they hear their CEO of their association constantly talking about something, it kind of puts fertilizer in the ground for them to try that. You know what? Jay's been talking about this for years. I'm going to give that a shot now. Whatever it is, I think that is the feel-good legacy stuff, because if I've had a hand in causing and giving confidence to some business owners to try things, and now all of a sudden a few business owners or 100 business owners or 1,000 business owners in our industry doing this, I can kind of sit back and say, man, look at what we did from this little office, you know, and impact an entire profession or an industry. So those are the things.
And, you know, Jay, I think that's a really good point for all CEOs of associations. It's not just association, but to your point, you can take that and leave it with many organizations that are members, which is like such a great effect to have. So you're in a great position. All CEOs, executives share that opportunity. And I think that's amazing. We end each episode by asking our guest about a recommended reading, but I'm going to ask you two questions. The first is, what's your handicap?
Right now, it's a 6. So it's pretty good. It's been a little lower, but you know, right now it's a 6. Yeah, so pretty good.
That's impressive. Okay. So you might not have time to read then, because to get a 6 handicap, you're on the course a lot. But let's see if you can leave us with a recommended reading book.
I found in my adult life, post kids and having kids, I don't read books very much at all anymore. You know, I do read a lot of periodicals, though. But the book that I am reading that I would recommend is called Outlive. It's The Science and Art of Longevity by Peter Attia. Now that I'm over 50, you know, taking care of myself is even more important for longevity purposes, because if we don't take good care of ourselves, what good are we to our families or our associations? So that's a book that I think is important. But I got to recommend that the one reading that I do not miss every week is the Wall Street Journal Saturday, the weekend edition. I don't read the Wall Street Journal during the week very much. I just get the Saturday edition delivered to my house. It has these awesome sections on culture and book reviews and politics, the economy. And it's not just journalism. It's really diving into all these things. So what's happening in the world? What are the great, interesting things happening in the world? And that's something that I use every week to kind of signal to me what's going on out there. Then I, again, synthesize it for my association for the golf industry. So to me, that's my favorite reading every single week.
I am a huge subscriber to that. I love the weekend edition. I don't get the daily. I will skim through online, but it's not just about the daily news. It's more about what's going on in the world and culture, art, everything. So it is a great read. So I appreciate that. So Jay, this has been a tremendous episode. I really want to thank you for your time and all your great advice and all the things you shared with our listeners. So thank you for taking the time out of your day to do this for us.
Of course. Thank you. And thanks to Naylor for all your support for the association community as well. So we appreciate you guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcast, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.